What if the way you run meetings could make or break your partnerships? In today's episode, Dr. Stephen Roddleberg, the world's top expert on meetings, shares how smarter strategies, intentionality, and the stewardship mindset can transform business outcomes and strengthen relationships. This is the Partnership Playbook, a podcast helping sales and marketing leaders secure high-value partnerships that finally unlocks business growth and reclaims time. I'm your coach, Phil Hay-Sinclair. Welcome to the show. So, Stephen Roddleberg, I have been consuming your content for some time. When I first discovered you, it was because of something that Adam Grant, another person I really admire, said. And he claims that you know more than anyone else in the world about meetings. And I would love to know where that started, because in my world of brokering partnerships, meetings are where those deals get done. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, they're done very badly. So mm-hmm. I would love to learn why this or how this can be done better. So where did this interest start for you?
Sure. Well, it's a very kind statement that Adam made, and I certainly appreciate it. You know, I'd like to tell the story of, you know, when I was 8 years old and my mom asked me what I want to be. And I said, I want to be a meeting scientist. But that's not the origin story. The origin story is really concern and worry. Namely that, you know, as an organizational psychologist, I'm really interested in the world of work and promoting effectiveness and well-being simultaneously. And in my search for meaningful research topics, what quickly became apparent is that people were wallowing in meetings for meaningful amounts of time. And yet there was a dearth of research that really focused on trying to prevent these types of problems. And then the fear that in many regards, we have this terrible epidemic of frustration and people not feeling a sense of accomplishment, and I wanted to do something about it. And certainly, I couldn't stand being in bad meetings, and being in universities, I'm in a lot of bad meetings. So basically, there was a need, there was a gap in what we know, and I wanted to be part of the solution. And so over 20 years ago, I decided to go hard on this topic. And amazingly, there was really no one else in this space. Mm-hmm. And so just started to try to do research to really figure out what are the key drivers to making positive changes, and then how could that science be translated? And then, you know, produce these books. And the first one was The Surprising Science of Meetings. And candidly, I didn't think it was going to go anywhere because it's about meetings and has the word science in the title. But, you know, to my surprise, 2 days after it was released, the Washington Post named it the number one leadership book. And then the tsunami happened. Then COVID happened, and interest in meetings was an all-time high. And so I've been loving it. I've been loving trying to get this work out there because it can make lives better and it can make organizations so much healthier.
It can. And the second book, Glad We Met, mm-hmm. The Science of the One-on-One Conversational Meeting, is something which, as leaders, we try to evolve every single time we have these one-on-one meetings. I don't think there's too many humans in the world that go, I can't wait to have another one-on-one meeting.
Right.
I think there is a lot of desire to make them better and more effective.
Yeah.
But how would you want the world, like before we get into the specifics of the art and science, if you were to leave people with one idea about what the frame of a great meeting would be, what would you tell them so that they could walk into the next conversation? Because people are on a bus right now, listen to this episode and going, I'm going to do this in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
What do you want people to think or feel or do in a great meeting?
First of all, I want people to realize that, I'm not going to be able to give you one simple thing. So I'm going to give you a few. So first is I want them to realize that they're not as good at doing this as they think they are. Because that's something that's emerged in the research, that when you try to diagnose the meeting problem, basically everyone points fingers at someone else.
Right.
And they need to point it at themselves. Our research consistently shows that we have inflated views of how good we are at running meetings. So that's step one, the realization. You are not as good at this as you think. And step two is that matters. That matters. You know, we have all this frustration. It is horrible to productivity. I just published an article yesterday that looked at this notion of meeting hangovers, which we basically found that when you have a bad meeting, you don't leave it at the door. It sticks with you and negatively affects your productivity. So after this self-awareness, then it is about making yourself part of the solution and being intentional and recognizing that actually doing meetings well is competitive advantage because everyone is so bad at them. So if you can do meetings well, you will thrive in your leadership role as well as lift your entire team. So view meetings as an opportunity to differentiate. So, okay, so now we have self-awareness. We have this potential goal that, okay, this can be really good for me. And then it's about execution. And execution is all about intentionality. And that intentionality matters, right? This idea that you're calling this party together, right? You're the host. You're asking people to give you the most valuable gift they all have, their time. How are you going to use that? And think about it and be intentional. And one of the interesting things, Phil, is that when you talk about this notion of intentionality, folks are intentional all the time when they're meeting with key stakeholders or key bosses, right? Because they don't want those people to leave their room, their meeting saying that was a waste. But then we discard intentionality when we're meeting with our peers or directs. And that's where the problem really kicks in.
I get that. You know, I cannot think of the number of times throughout COVID when we were trying to just look survive. Let's not even believe that we were trying to thrive. And there was this bizarre trade-off between we want people to be here so they're not alone, and we want to get through these meetings well so we can get on with the day.
Right.
And I found that trade-off ridiculously difficult to do because there felt like there was more at stake with if somebody wasn't involved, they're already displaced. Mm-hmm. Is that going to crater or impact their mental health further than what it already is? Or is it better for them to be in a meeting so they feel like they're included? Right. And I tussled with that for a really long time until I think one of my team said, listen, I think people are probably better than you think they are. I'm glad that you care, but let's just give them some time back.
Oh, man, Phil, spot on. Good for you. Spot on. You're absolutely right. In fact, we have data that shows that you know, the more individuals you have in your meeting in the name of fostering inclusion, the less included they feel. Okay. And I think that's really important, right? So they experience it like you're checking a box.
Yeah.
So people coming to a meeting and not actually having room or space to truly engage, they leave having the exact negative feeling that may have been your intention,
right?
As opposed to letting them thrive, right? Keeping them in the loop as they need, but let people thrive. You know, if you can create a culture where people just attend the meetings that they actually have to be at, and you have a culture where there's this shared norms around how to keep people in the loop, you know, then you have much leaner meetings. You know, furthermore, I'm a big advocate in, you know, meeting times being much more intentional as well. So, you know, we don't want to default just to an hour meeting just because that's what Google Calendar tells us to do, right? We want to make choices. We want to say, yeah, no, this meeting's 15 minutes. This meeting is 23 minutes, especially because of something called Parkinson's Law. And Parkinson's Law is the idea that work expands to fill whatever time's allotted to it. So if you schedule a meeting for an hour, it magically will take an hour. But we can actually use this science to our advantage. Because if you schedule a meeting for 20 minutes, you will still get it done. And worst case is you tell people, hey, let's just follow up later. But there are so many opportunities to give time back, have people feel more respected, still have lots of touch points, but we just need to be more thoughtful about it.
Like that is the grab, right? Like that is the most important thing. The number of times that people see my calendar, book a time for 15 minutes and just feel overwhelmed at the fact that that's not enough time. Mm-hmm. And yet we achieve twice as much in a 15 minute slot compared to otherwise blows their mind. And I don't think I'll ever be in another 1 hour meeting again in my life.
I totally hear you. I agree. I mean, I get, you know, I'm asked all the time to review people's, new startups around meetings, right? And I made a pact. I will talk to anyone. It's kind of giving back. But I cap it at 15 minutes.
Totally.
And they are like, oh, 15 minutes. We can't do it in 15 minutes. But they show up. Yeah. We get it done. And we get the important stuff, the minor that's stuff, right. But we don't hit. And that's fine.
That's it. Now, you mentioned before intentionality. And this is a super important piece where you've got the idea of being conversating with your internal people. And then you go to an external meeting.
Yeah.
And this in the partnership world, right? We're trying to grow. We're trying to build better supply chains. It involves other people that feel like you, often people feel like they've got to impress them, bring them close and make it work. Yet internally, that focus literally falls off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And you see a very distinct difference. Is there more than just the intentionality that lives there, or is there something else that lives below that, which is, you know, we need the outside people more, so we're going to pay more attention to them, and then we walk back in and it's sort of like, no, it's fine. I can talk to Bob or Jill anytime, and it's not really a big deal.
It's the intentionality. It's the intentionality. It's just when we meet with these external partners, we spend a couple minutes to think about it and how to make it a good use of time, right? We don't over-invite with external partners because we know that will piss them off, right? Mm. We think more carefully about time. So all the skills that we do with these external partners, we just mortgage them when it comes to our internal collaborators. But I think your question is just so important because it really speaks to the fact that it's not hard to be intentional.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I wonder, you know, when it comes to one of the concepts you talk about in your work around the stewardship mindset, and there is, you know, in the idea of building a great following if you're a leader, or building great partnerships if that's what you're trying to do, there is this idea of trying to make sure that every conversation, even if there are different people in the room, that you are carrying a standard.
Mm.
And I'm wondering where the stewardship idea came from and why that's so important and what people are missing from that right now, because the way in which I see continuity, if that's a similar thing, going through meetings is very, very low compared to the intentionality people would apply to it being, it's so important to maintain this relationship and to keep it thriving and healthy. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about that stewardship mindset.
Sure. So in our, I mean, we've interviewed thousands of meeting attendees and leaders, and really asking them about the characteristics of the best meeting leaders. Mm-hmm. And what emerges is the best meeting leaders have something in common. And what they have in common is this stewardship mindset, this idea that the thought of people leaving your meeting saying that was a waste is so uncomfortable to you that you become intentional. You become thoughtful.
Yeah.
You know, Phil, in many regards, it's what you did here, right? So when we think about how you prepared for this podcast, right? You were connecting with me. You were sharing potential questions. You were getting feedback and thoughts. You prepared. You acted like a steward. And I feel it. I know it. And that makes me much more willing to engage. Because, right, we all have competing demands. We're all really busy. But your stewardship behaviors have led to this moment. And so this idea of being a good steward and just very much dialed in that you don't want to be part of the problem, you want to be part of the solution, that mindset just makes you a person that is able to turn on the dime if something's not working, to be thoughtful, right? So we think about partnerships, and I love what you do. I love your focus on partnerships. It's so important. But think about the essence of a great partnership is really understanding the partner.
Right.
Really understanding the partner, right? If you go into a partnership meeting and you're just about displaying yourself, the partnership's not going to take.
Yeah.
But the more you can truly understand that partner and understand their needs, their values, then magical things can happen, right? Synergistic things can happen.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing when that happens. The same thing applies to meetings, right? So when we start to truly understand the people who are going to be in the room, we start to really think about what we need to achieve. Once we start making that investment, then you can have something really synergistic and magical happen. And we know, like, we can all think about some meetings that were phenomenal. I was in one yesterday where we developed unexpected outcomes. We're like, dang, this wouldn't have happened if we kept on emails. But the only way that was achieved was by having the ecosystem around that meeting that could promote those types of conversations, and one that truly did welcome input and promoted true listening.
So let's double tap on that for a second. You, when we talk about, you know, sometimes it doesn't need a meeting. It can be an email. It can be a text.
Sure.
Now we can put to one side where the intent can get sucked out of written communication and there can't be the exchange. Do you have a rule of thumb about when there should be a meeting versus an email?
Yes. Basically, if there is some, if the purpose requires engagement and interaction.
Right.
So if you don't have that, then there's lots of other vehicles that we can communicate with folks. You know, one of the neat things leaders can do is actually just record themselves talking. Right? People love podcasts.
Yeah.
People love podcasts because they can do it at their convenience. They can do it such that they're not interrupting their other activities, right? They get to reclaim control and agency, which is what people want. So there's lots of types of one-way communication vehicles. So it's really if you need two-way communication, that's when you need to meet. But if you don't need two-way communication or engagement, let it go. Pick a different medium.
You know, it's funny. During, I think it was maybe 2020, maybe 2019, I discovered, I don't know why it took me so long, but I discovered a tool called Loom, and I'm sure you've seen and used it a lot. Loom became my go-to outward communication context deliverer. Mm-hmm. Whenever I needed to let somebody know ahead of time in a meeting or if I could do something else, Loom was used. I think I've easily 5,000 Looms I've sent so far on long and short, just to say, listen, before we meet, here's the context.
Yep.
Or before we do something, just so you know, because I don't want to take up half an hour of your time trying to futz over the context for something so you know what I'm here to talk about and then spend another half an hour trying to get you across the line. It is such a true statement. And I have no affiliation with Loom, by the way, but I think it's one of the world's greatest products to help short circuit that.
I love it. And that's great. That's great. You know, I'll add, and this is relevant to partnerships as well, is we often think that we have to build in team building into our meetings to try to build this sense of connection. I don't buy it. One of the greatest ways to build connection is actually have a phenomenal meeting.
Yeah.
That feelings can actually arise from the behavior, right? Mm-hmm. So think about it from a sports analogy, right? If you're a football team, and I'm talking about not American football, right? So if they're on the pitch and they're winning, they like each other a lot, right? Winning promotes liking. The same thing happens in meetings. If you have a meeting and it's productive and meaningful, people leave there, they feel really good about each other. 100%. And so that's an interesting mechanism, right? So when you have your meetings with partners, but it's really productive and effective and it results in something thoughtful, people like, they like each other more.
And I love what you said earlier about the fact that it follows you. Right, the idea of it, you walking out of that conversation, I've seen that sadly a very small amount of times compared to what it should have been, and people's shoulders drop, and it's like I have clarity, and it's a bit like the Brené Brown saying, you know, clear as kind. There is something about the ability to sort of walk out and just go, I get that, that's good, let's move on.
Right,
reclaiming the time is super super important.
It is.
Stephen, we have been talking now for 18 minutes. And if anyone has gone all this way through here, just imagine the value. And we've got 10 minutes to run. This is what a great meeting looks like, by the way, just in case people are trying to work out what they're seeing. Steve, I'm wondering, you know, where the hybrid versus the in-person meeting, we have a lot of those now. You know, I think now for most companies around the world, there's a hybrid nature of, you know, usually people are in person maybe 3 days a week instead of the full five or six. I'm just wondering, when you think about trying to create a great meeting in those two contexts, where you have distractions everywhere on a virtual meeting versus you have a little bit more focus when you're in person, how should people be trying to navigate that if they've got the intention set and they want to make a great meeting? Is there a distinction between what they should be doing in the meeting to make it a great outcome?
There's a lot there. That's such a great question. And so the long and short of it, and then I'm going to give you a little bit more controversial content. The long and short of it is basically the drivers of excellent meetings are not context dependent. They generally are context independent. Mm-hmm. Being a thoughtful steward leader who's facilitating more than they talk is relevant in on all contexts. In fact, the more the leader talks, the lower the ratings of effectiveness.
Right.
That's a good thing to keep in mind, right? Mm-hmm. Just like if you're in a partner meeting and you're dominating the heck out of it.
Yeah.
The other person's not having a good experience.
Yeah.
So the key drivers of success can really be applied into any context. Now, with that said, certain contexts do require a little bit of extra, right? So we think about virtual meetings. The use of chat provides an incredible mechanism for bringing more voices in. Mm-hmm. And so the behavioral implication is you have to open up chat and you might need to ask someone in the meeting to actually monitor the chat for you, you know, to bring those voices in. So there's some nuanced differences. But let me pivot to kind of the more controversial stuff. And so this is stuff that I've talked about quite a bit in the media. Because it's a little bit less, it's more counterintuitive. So basically, we have three principal ways of doing a meeting, where you have face-to-face, we have fully virtual, and then we have hybrid meetings, where some people are in person, others aren't. Pre-COVID, face-to-face was by far the best. Best outcomes, the best. During COVID, people leveled up their skills. And what we actually observed was that virtual meetings started to really do well. In fact, in many ways, virtual meetings have a lot more potential than most meeting types, because there's characteristics of virtual meetings that are pretty special. For example, there's no head of table effects, right? Everyone's on equal footing. And we know table effects matter, right? We've seen these dynamics where everyone just looks at the leader or who's next to the leader, and we can eliminate that. You know, we have the use of chat, which is a really valuable mechanism for bringing voices who tend to be quieter in meetings. We have all these great plugins that allow for quick testing of consensus via voting and such. Mm-hmm. So virtual meetings have really leveled up. So where does that leave hybrid meetings? Hybrid meetings are not showing good data. They're showing horrible data. Right. Basically now, if you have to identify the worst meeting types, it's hybrid meetings. The experience of those who attend remote is so fundamentally different than those who are in person. Those remote tend to feel more marginalized. They typically just spend the time multitasking, and they just don't feel like part of the mix in the same way. The voices in the room get privileged. There's no way around it. And no one's immune to it. I know when I lead a hybrid meeting, I work so hard to try to bring in those outside voices, but I still miss because you're always influenced by the people in the room more so. So hybrid meetings are not showing strong effectiveness. They're showing disengagement in many ways. Now that state could be temporary, right? Because a lot of it is due to the technology we're using, right? So we can imagine that as conference rooms become more sophisticated, for example, instead of hybrid attendees, being on a screen, instead every empty chair actually has a laptop, has an iPad on it with the face of the other attendee. So mm-hmm. when you look around the room, you see everyone, right? So there's a whole host of technology gains that will happen to make meeting rooms into places where hybrid meetings can take place more effectively, but we're not there yet. So right now, hybrid meetings are not a good choice. It's much better just to do everything virtual. Let everyone be on the same plane. And that works totally fine. You know, even if three people are in the same building, do this. If not everyone's can be there, just do it virtually. That's fine. Yeah. You know, as we move more hybrid, what we don't want is for people just to come to work and be in meetings. Mm. That's not the desired state, right? The reason why we think we want people to be back at work is because of the small encounters that can happen that can elevate connections, work, promote this innovative thought unexpectedly, right? Yeah. It's just these moments right? That's what we missed in COVID, were moments. We didn't miss coming into a work and having a meeting in a conference room, right? That's not the issue.
Nope.
So as people come in, we just want to make sure that we are creating environments where people can have those moments. We don't want them just to be in conference rooms. That's defeating the purpose. But if we can have moments, that's a win.
For everyone listening to this, I hope you've taken away such important skills and thinking on how we can do better meetings. We know how much time we spend sleeping of our lives. If you think about how much time you spend in meetings, why wouldn't you try and make them great? And Steve, you've done a great job of helping us understand what that looks like. We're going to link to both of your books in the show notes. Okay. I want to get you out of the door because we've got both things to be at soon after this, and I sincerely appreciate the time. I'm keen to have another conversation with you. Before we do that, I'd love to run through our rapid fire set of questions. Before we do that, where can I send people to learn more about you as they're listening to this show?
Thank you. The best place is my website, and that's stephenrogelberg.com, stephenrogelberg.com. And basically, I've tried to build it as a resource center. I mean, there's so much on there.
It's excellent.
Thank you so much. And so that's the best place of going. People can certainly buy the books. I'm so passionate around getting the science out. I don't make a penny off these books. All my royalties go to charity. Mm-hmm. And that's totally fine because I just want to get the content out there. So buy the books if you want to learn about meetings, or buy the books if you want to help eradicate cancer. Both are fabulous. And then before we jump into your rapid fire questions, which I'm excited about, I just want to give you a heartfelt thank you. Really, I appreciate your stewardship. I appreciate your thoughtfulness. I feel valued, and I feel like I use my time effectively.
I appreciate that. Well, that's the aim, and I have the immense privilege of talking to people just like you to learn extraordinary amounts about the world. So thank you for doing what you do.
My pleasure.
It's a big deal. All right, Stephen, rapid fire. Okay. Here we go. Question number one, complete this sentence. Partnership is?
About genuinely understanding what the other person needs so that you can find synergistic solutions that raise all boats.
Question two, what content are you loving at the moment? And it can be anything.
Well, I'm definitely loving this article that just came out on meeting hangovers. But I also am loving, my daughter is a journalist at Fortune magazine, and she just released an article about P. Diddy, a big feature on it. And I'm loving that too.
Oh, that's amazing. What's the worst piece of advice you received and why?
That's a really interesting question because I tend not to curate the negative. And so I'm going to say that the worst piece of advice I was given was a lack of advice. So I can think of some times where I was put into some situations by leaders and they didn't prepare me effectively. They didn't share that what were completely apparent landmines to them. So it was the lack of advice that was probably most problematic.
I get that. Question four, when you see potential for a new partnership, what's the first thing you do to turn that potential into action?
Ask questions and listen sincerely.
And finally, what's one thing, actually, I should never ask this question. There are multiple things, I'm sure, but what is one thing you are truly grateful for right now?
Oh, so many things. I'm grateful for my family.
Well, that was the rapid fire. This has been an amazing half hour. Stephen Rodelberg, thank you so much for the time. And this will be out soon. So I wish you a fantastic day and I can't wait for our next conversation.
Thank you, Phil. I look forward to it as well.
Before you go, I have a quick question for you. Do you worry that you're wasting time, money, and credibility with the wrong partnerships? It's exhausting to pretend everything's fine while secretly worrying that you've made the wrong call. You see others thriving with the right connections and you're stuck wondering if you're missing out on opportunities that could really elevate your business. Well, the good news is that ends today because you can download my free partner calculator that instantly assesses if a partner is an ideal fit for your business. It'll give you the clarity and the confidence and the edge you've been looking for to secure high-value partnerships that not only finally unlock business growth, but also help you reclaim your time. The link is in the show notes. And I'm really glad you're here. I'm Coach Phil Hayes Sinclair. I'll see you in the next episode.